Hello, this is Super Dan Anderson, and you are listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneer Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee in the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Tell them Super Dan sent you.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the AMAA Martial Arts Masters Blog Talk Radio Show, hosted by the American Martial Arts Alliance. Dedicated to building the awareness of professionalism in the martial arts through martial arts management and student development.
Aloha, everyone. Happy Tuesday evening to you. This is Professor Gary Lee sharing with you the Sport Karate Museum Archives, and we are the AMAAA Pioneers and Legends Archives Radio Show. Parts Unknown, where we feature the personal up-to-date interviews with the pioneers and legends of the sport karate world and the American martial art icons. You know, this is our, I think this is our 12th show. And I have never done this before, what I'm going to do tonight. But you got to understand that the person tonight is my special guest. He's the reason why I'm even behind a microphone. A lot of years that a lot of people just take for granted when they see me behind a microphone that I've been doing it a long time. Well, I have. I've been since I've been hanging out with this guy. It started with the Karate Olympics, and it went on to mean literally being the voice of Super Grands for 5 to 6 years, and then traveling around the world, helped creating Black Belt TV and the thousands of interviews. But I owe it all to this man here that I'm going to introduce right now, and I'd like to talk about him before. While I bring him on. Mr. George Minshew, are you there, sir?
I am very here, Gary.
Hey, Mr. Minshew, how are you?
Listen, if I got any better, I'd pass out. I'm just doing great, I'll tell you.
Well, I've got a big smile on my face because it's always a pleasure talking to you. And, you know, I meant what I said. I owe you a lot, and I really appreciate when you're just beginning to see the stories and the history, people will understand how you are a big part of the journey of the Sport Karate Museum Archives and what you did. And tonight, being my co-host, I'm really honored that you're here. So we're going to kind of go through some things, and if you feel that you need to make an input or say something, man, just say, shut up, Gary.
I'll butt in when I can, that's for sure.
Well, I was butted in on you. That's the reason why I learned how to talk on a microphone. So, God bless you. By the way, you know, Mr. Bowen, my producer, Hunchy Jesse Bowen out of North Carolina, every show he does something really special, and this was going to be really special. We're fixing to go through the Atlantic Mega event that Alan Gober puts on, and that's at the Tropicana in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And we're going to have a booth up there, and we're doing our live show. And I got a special surprise after I tell you this. The people that buy the books during the show tonight, during the special George Minshew interview, we're going to get the book signed by a lot of the major stars up there. Jeff Smith, Bill Wallace, Cynthia Rothrock, Michael J. White, Don DeVries, Mikey Rowe. I mean, there's going to be all kinds of people up there that are in the book that Jesse is going to, Mr. Bowen's going to get extra people to sign. And that's a book you'll receive if you order it tonight. And the number to call to get that book tonight will be 919-618-8075. And that's Mr. Bowen's number. You call him directly. If you want to order the book at any time of your leisure, you go to www.whoswhointhemartialarts.com and go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or check out our Century site, where Century is selling the book now also. This is a comprehensive book that basically talks about various people in American martial arts and goes back to the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s. Now, that special surprise, Mr. Minshew, that I was going to share with the audience is that we're going to be debuting our live segment radio show, but we're going to be debuting a 24/7 network for the radio blog, and it'll be debuting at Alan's event. And we'll be covering the banquet and Michael DePasquale Jr.'s incredible speech that he does every year, and all the awards. And it's a great debut to introduce a 24/7 in your face radio blog. What do you think about that, Mr. Minster? That's pretty cool, huh?
You know, it's just amazing. Sometimes when I look at the journey that martial arts have been in this country since I started in the very early 60s to now, where you have people involved in the martial arts, not just can make a living by teaching, but also can make a living now by performing, fighting, or all kinds of different things, writing books, being in the movies. There's so many avenues now for trained martial artists. It's just exciting to have been a part of it when it started and to be a part of it now.
You know what's exciting is the fact that right now people from England, Europe, Hawaii, Japan, Canada, Mexico, all over America, they're able to listen to our show and listen to the history like a pioneer talk about what we're going to talk about here in a few minutes. That's amazing, too, that we can do that and come into people's living rooms through their computers and through their phones and share this history that we helped create. Even though, you know, we're Asian influence, sport karate, as you know, was born here in America, and that's what this Legends and Pioneers show is about. And it's about people like you, and we'll get to you in just a few minutes. I want you to know, we want to thank everyone around there also for all the incredible emails that we get. I'm really, it's incredible. I've gotten beaucoup bunches of emails, and that's one of my favorite segments of the show, to talk about each individual. We do two a night, and they're always interesting questions. We also have a very special segment that we've added. It's called the Artifact Show, and we had a few minutes to talk about some of the artifacts that we have for the Sport Karate Museum. And we spend a moment and we talk about the people that given to us from their heart and their love of martial arts are not here anymore. And we've lost them we're losing an entire generation of fine black belts, you know, men and women who laid the foundation for and developed the strongest system of martial arts in the world. And the passing of each one saddens me greatly and saddens the history generals. You know, I suggest you seek out and to talk with as many of that generation as possible, because when they pass, they'll never be the likes of them. Again, never. And we need to cherish the resource to be able to talk to them, get their email, find their address, write them a letter, call them up on the phone, and tell them that you appreciate what they did for sport karate. You know, again, if you want to call direct and listen to this interview, we're fixing to talk about, or talk to Mr. Minshew at the end of the show, you can call 657-383-1410. And always to support the Karate Museum Archives, you go to www.sportkaratemuseum.org. Mr. Minshew, I want to talk about some of the upcoming guests before we get directly to you. I've got Colonel Phil Torres, retired Marine. He's coming up here real soon. Mr. Bill Viola, Mr. Bruce Brutti, your friend Jim Buten from Oklahoma, and another friend of yours, Judge Roy Kirby. Sam Chapman. We've got the great Mikey Roe Moore, the great woman fighter from California. Bob Leiker from Kansas and American Kick producer. Robert Hartfield, Al Francis, Jerry Trimble Jr. We've asked Harry Mock. We've asked Duke Churchill. Mr. Willie Hicks is our next interview with the great fighter from the presently. Mr. Jim Hartley and Mr. Jim Anderson and Mr. Mike Stone. Mr. Don DeVries and Mr. Richard McClain, just to name a few of the people that will be coming up. And later on in the show, we'll talk about the exact dates. You know, when you talk about Mr. Minshew, you talk about the fact that he's known as a producer, a director, an actor. He's an author. He's a master instructor. And he's known for a renewed with the franchise Karate Studios. And he's mostly known for the Karate Olympics, one of the top five tournaments in the country at the time when there wasn't really, except the big tournaments that were there, like the Internationals and Shows and the Battle of Atlanta, of course. But what people don't remember about Mr. Minshew was that he was a great fighter, too. We're going to talk about that. But, Mr. Minshew, I know that you won a couple state titles back in the day when it was a big deal to win a state title. What were the two state titles that you won? I'm just curious.
Well, I won the Louisiana State title and the Missouri State. I didn't win Texas because it's Texas, and I'm telling you, everybody, there are no easy fights in Texas, and never have been.
Well, I know a bunch of coon asses, as you knew, Ernie Radar Smith and Rob Prejean and all those animals, Brent Faubacher.
Absolutely,
they were tough dudes. Yeah. Gene McComb, I can go on and on with the Q-Nass guy. So winning a Louisiana title, that's pretty darn good. Now, what was the other state you mentioned?
I'm sorry, say what?
What was the other state that you said you won the state title?
Missouri.
Missouri. Now, that's tough,
Missouri.
Too, man. That's a bunch of toughies up there, too. I imagine.
Yeah.
And, I want to say this. You and I both remember when it was a big deal to win a state title, and then someone decided to invite three states or four states and call it a national tournament, and then someone wanted to invite a couple states in a country like Canada and Mexico, call it a world tournament. You know, winning a state championship back in that day, you know, it must have been really tough because it was bare knuckle, first of all, and you had to fight some really guys that were just inventing karate. What was it like in the early days before Japan?
And you touched on it, Gary, about being bare knuckle. As a matter of fact, I never even wore a cup until I made black belt. It just or a mouthpiece as far as that goes either. But it wasn't. There are people that are competing today. Some very good fighters that have never competed outside of their region or their state, because there's so many tournaments now. If you wanted to, you could go to a tournament every single weekend and not drive more than 3 or 4 hours. But
right.
To be able to do that, back in the beginning, I mean, I fought all over the country, all the way from, Rhode Island to Cleveland, Ohio, and of course in Texas and the surrounding states, Oklahoma and so forth. But you couldn't stay in your region or in your state and hope that you were going to be able to have enough competition to be able to make yourself any better. You just had to travel, and everybody hit hard. And when it's bare knuckle, I don't care if they miss, it doesn't feel good.
Well, let's talk about the early days. What started George Minshew? And I feel uncomfortable calling George Minshew. I want to call you Mr. Minshew. What started Mr. Minshew in karate? What was your impression? Who impressed you first? Who was your first step into martial arts?
Well, it's really interesting. Like back at that time, there was a guy that from Los Angeles. All of these books I'd gotten one of Bruce Tegner's books, and I was looking at. I thought this is great, but there were no karate instructors around that I knew of where I was. So when I moved to Houston, and I was living in these apartments, some people in the same apartment complex were. I saw them walking one day. They had on these white pajamas and everything. Looked like judo people. So, I went up to them and I said, hey, are you guys doing judo? And they said, no, we're doing karate. I said, wow, that's great. Where are you going? They told me. And the name of the place was Japan Ways. And it was the first karate studio in Houston. Full-time, open all the time.
Robert Halliburton came out of there.
Okay. Yeah. And, Robert eventually moved to Fresno and became very successful out there and he's just a wonderful guy. As a matter of fact, he met his wife Faye at the Japan Way School, and they moved out to California together. And then much along the same lines as you and Tammy, your wife Tammy, You guys met each other at the Black Belt Academy. So it kind of, a lot of that, you know, it works that way because most of the karate instructors don't have time to be able to do anything except teach karate. But, and so I just went down with them.
Yeah, Faye Halliburton has been really helpful for the Sport Karate Museum. I really like her. And I love Robert Halliburton. And when I actually met him at the Second Living Legends, and he came in and to be honored, and of course we put him into the Texas Martialist Hall of Fame in 2012, Mr. Castor, Scott, and David did, and Texas Martial Arts Hall of Fame. So God bless Robert Halliburton, rest in peace, and God bless Faye, wherever you're at, if you're listening. Appreciate all your help. Now, Japan Way taught Shotokan, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
That's correct. Now, here we go. Here's the magic questions. When you left Japan Ways, what did Mr. Minshew do next? Was that when you created the franchise karate studios, or is that when you started thinking about Black Belt
Academy? Kind of an involved thing. You know, Robert had moved out to Fresno, California, and a couple other guys that I knew had moved out to Fresno. So I went out there and visited with them for a while, and then came back to Houston. And I had met this guy that I had tremendous respect for. He was an incredible fighter, and he had a karate school in Fort Worth, and he was a great teacher, and he was still struggling, of course, like most people did at that time, on how can I make this be some way that I can afford to feed my family and all of that kind of stuff. So and that was J. Pat Burleson, who became my second instructor and my lifelong best friend. As a matter of fact, Gary, he was the best man at my wedding with my wife, Chris Minshew, who I know you know. And so it's just, I got involved with the Texas Taekwondo through Pat Burleson. And
we're going to be getting to Mr. Burleson, and that's very important. I want to focus on from Japan Ways. When did Black Belt Academy come in your mind? We're still about 60, right?
Yeah. The Japan Ways at one time was very successful because I worked there. And
yes,
when I started there, he had one school. And when I left, he had, I think there was, I want to say six. Could have been seven. Anyway, five or six schools.
Wow.
And we had some disagreements, and so I told him, nothing behind the back or any of that stuff. I said, listen, I'm gonna go now and open my own school and do some things the way that I feel like I want to do them, and so that's what I did, and I started the first school.
Thank goodness
I had,
for that.
Yeah, and I'm glad too. But that first school, I leased a space.
So where was the very first school? Was the very first school in Bel Air?
No, the first school
okay.
was on T.C. Jester Boulevard off of 610 in Houston.
Okay.
And it was a new little shopping center there, and so I leased the space. It didn't have, it was an unfinished space. Didn't have anything in it, and also didn't have any air conditioning. In Houston, that's just not possible to do. But I put down the lease money, and I got, a sheet of plywood and laid it across two sawhorses and a chair, and that was my desk. And I wrote karate on the window and spelled it correctly, and that was real important. and I was open for business. So the first month's rent was coming due, and I could either pay the rent or put an ad in the local television guide. If the ad worked, I would have enough money for the rent. If it didn't work, I wouldn't have enough money for the rent, and I'd be gone. And fortunately, the ad just exploded. People just poured into the karate school, and I never looked back from there. That was our first school.
That was the magic question I was going to ask you, is that, I've got you down for three firsts. the first verse was the first franchise karate studios where they're, you sew two, three, four, five, where you sew a lot more students. And then the TV commercials where you taught, got to be in front of thousands of people. Now, this is
yeah.
an issue.
Oh, my gosh.
What happened? Were you ready for that explosion? Because no one ever
done
that before.
No, they hadn't. And I had a lady who's still a very close friend of mine that was produced some television commercials. She was doing advertising. And so I talked to her about it, and so we decided to make this commercial, a television commercial for karate. And it's 30 seconds. And, of course, I wanted to say everything I knew about karate in that 30 seconds, plus make sure to tell them to come see me, all of that. And, of course, I talked very, very fast because I wanted to make sure that everything that I could think of I would say to encourage somebody to come in. And so at the end of the commercial
– Did you talk
I'm
faster
sorry?
Than him? Because he talked, than Mr. Jim McIndale, because he talked pretty fast.
Well, it was about the same. Let's
okay.
say that it wasn't a great quality commercial. Let's be honest, but
yeah.
I had at that time I had four karate schools in Houston, and so I thought, well, I've got them spread out enough that we can share the expense for these commercials because they were obviously expensive. And we ran them on a TV show, the first night of a TV show that was called Kung Fu, starring David Carradine.
Yes.
And so we put it on there, and, of course, you just have one number, and that number was for the school in Bel Air, but it happened that I was at one of our other schools, Northland, that night, and it ran late. I think that TV show came on at 9 o'clock. And the phone started ringing at the Northland school, so I talked to the guy and eventually got around to, which I should have done sooner. I said, and he said, well, I saw your ad on television. And I said, well, that's great. And I talked to him, and I said, by the way, why didn't you call the number that was on television? Why did you call this number? He said, I've been trying for 45 minutes to call that number. I couldn't get through. You know, bing, the light went off in my head. I said, oh, my God.
Right.
So I jumped in my car and drove as fast as I could. And I got over to Bel Air School, and the guy was on the phone, the guy that was running the school at the time, and was talking with someone. So I came in, and I waved my hand at him. I said, you need to hang up. And he kind of put his hand over. He said, I'm talking to somebody about karate. And I said, I know you are. Hang up the phone. So he hung up the phone. As soon as it touched down, it rang again. And so I picked it up, and I said, Black Belt Academy. And the guy said, yeah, I saw your advertisement on television. I said, let me have your name and phone number, and I'll have somebody call you back. Because that was the only way. And the phone kept ringing and ringing and ringing. And Gary, we got over 250 phone calls that we were able to register that night. I don't know how many we didn't get, but I know we did get 250.
And that was early 70s, right? Late 70s, early 70s.
Let's see. That must have been, yeah, right around that time, yeah. Because
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Nobody was
doing that. Oh, it was crazy.
That.
It was crazy. You know,
well,
and
I want to ask you this. I want to ask you this. What about the Brown Belt program in 649? And the art of the soft sell. And, I mean, that's where I came in. I learned how to sell karate through Leather Academy, without a doubt. I really was just a karate instructor, a fighter, didn't know how to really sell. And you did literally teach me that art. But the art of the soft sell, we didn't sell black belt programs. We sold brown belt programs. But where did that,
yeah.
where did that vision come from?
Well, you know, early on I knew there was a lot I didn't know, a whole lot I did not know. And remember I told you about the lady who had the advertising agency.
Right.
And she had worked for a health studio. And the name of it at the time was Slender Bollock. The guy had about 10 or 12 health studios. So she made it possible for me to attend their meetings on Monday nights. Monday night, I could go to their meetings and learn from all of their input. Then on Tuesday night, I would go to the Fred Astaire Dance Studio, which is owned by a fellow at the time named George Ballas. people may not know that name, but they'll know his product because he is the inventor of the Weed Eater.
Okay.
And so I was able to go to their meetings. So I learned a lot from both,
that's
you know, both industries.
Okay.
Yeah. And so
well,
one of the
I
things that I've always
this, okay, I got to tell my listeners this, and you know, it's 30 years ago, but let me tell you something. Without this hustle, I probably wouldn't be where I am today or done what I've done. I had to sell, if I remember right, $750 worth of karate a week. And if I didn't, if I was $1 short, you wouldn't allow me to go to any karate tournaments. Of course, everyone knew how many karate tournaments I went to.
We did put a little pressure on it.
I have to stay there on Saturday and teach intros just to get my earnings up. But you know what? You know, I appreciate that. I want my listeners to know, if you don't have hard skill in the early years, you don't appreciate anything you get when you get older. And when I pass on knowledge to either my black belts or to my son or to anybody I do seminars with, I always mention that. And I want to say thank you publicly. Thank you for that. It was an incredible journey to learn how to sell for Black Belt Academy. So I want to go back one more time, and then I want to go further, take a jump. I want to go back to the very Suzuki Kata. What year was that, and when did that come about? Now, Suzuki is not the motorcycle, but then again, it is. Tell me about it.
Yeah, it probably will shine a bad light because you have to think back to the early 60s and 70s, and the people that I associated with were tournament fighters. And I don't throw the word fighters around loosely. In those early times,
humor. Even back then,
they were fighters.
Prime back then. Yeah.
Yeah. And so kata was not held in the high esteem that it is today because we felt, well, okay, yes, you can, you know, you look good, but can you hit somebody or can you keep them from hitting you? You know, that was our approach to it. So it took us, right. Longer than for a lot of other maybe places around the country, being in Texas, because everybody loves to fight. So you just work at it. So I had these guys, they were doing kata, and everybody's so serious then, Gary, about kata. I mean,
yes,
you couldn't
sir.
Make any sounds. It's kind of like watching a judo tournament, you know. And everybody's so quiet. So I made up this kata using karate movements as if I were straddling a motorcycle in a horse stance and do a heel
motorcycle
stomp, and that would be starting the motorcycle and then twisting and spinning and all of that. It looked like karate, but it was really movements that on an invisible motorcycle. And
absolutely.
And I got graded on
absolutely.
It. You know?
Well, you know, I won years later. I forgot what year. It was in the 90s. We were doing something, and I won with it years later. So I just had to mention that because that was a lot of fun. But let's talk about this. One of the other first things that you did, you were the first ever to come up with the idea to give away a championship, grand championship ring, and that was for the incredible karate Olympic years. I want to talk about that a little bit. What was the vision of that? And of course, everyone, Daniel won it. Jeremy Harrison won it. I mean, there's a lot of people that were that won back in the day, but
all kinds of people. Jeff Smith, Fred Wren, Joe Lewis, James Stevens, Jimmy Tabaras.
Yes.
I mean, on and on.
Ring, what'd you come up with that?
Well,
now everybody gives away a ring, but you were the first.
Yeah, I know. I know. But how it came about is the Karate Olympics started in the same year as the Super Bowl, which is why I was using the same, you know, the Roman numerals as you mark the Super Bowl. And so I used those same Roman numerals, and it was easy for me to keep up with.
I was wondering why the name was different, though. You didn't spell Olympics the same way.
I'm sorry?
You didn't spell Olympics the same way, did you? No. You spelled it with a K.
No,
right?
I had to change the spelling. I did in the beginning. I spelled it the way you're supposed to spell it. Then I got this very intimidating letter from the, I think it was from the U.S. Congress or the library or whatever, you know, saying, whoa, no, you can't do that. You know, you can't use the word Olympics. And so that's how I it came about that I changed the spelling to I put the K in place of the C, O-L-Y-M-P-I-K-A-S. And the ring came about because since we were the same, moving along the same path as the Super Bowl, I noticed those guys, even those professional guys that were making tons of money, they were all so proud of their giant Super Bowl ring. So I thought, well, you know, we need a ring in martial arts. But, you know, they're not cheap.
No. But being a pioneer of that, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now, you went through quite a few tournament sanctions, and I'm going to go through each one, but I got to start off with, of course, with the AOK, the Amateur Organization of Karate. It was Mr. Roy Curbin, Jose Santa Maria, Joe Alvarado, Ishmael Robles, Al Francis, Mickey Fisher, and a gentleman named Mr. George Minshew that came up with an idea to form a Texas organization of sport karate in Texas. What brought that about? And you sat on the board for many years, and but what brought up about the AOK?
Yeah, well, actually, we kind of contacted the people in the Texas area that were putting on tournaments, and we got together a meeting actually here in Houston at the Hilton Hotel downtown. And what I liked about the Hilton Hotel, they had this sort of circular table, so nobody was at the head of the table. And so I invited as many people as I could think of, and other people did, and we talked about standardizing rules, because at the time, every tournament had its own rules, and you learned what they were when you got there, which made it really kind of difficult. You know, sometimes you could kick to the groin, sometimes you couldn't, sometimes you could throw them down on the floor and stomp on their head, sometimes you couldn't. Different things changed. So that was the impetus for starting something so we could have a standardized set of rules. And as a matter of fact, the name of the association, the Amateur Organization of Karate, is the name that I suggested, and it was adopted. And
super.
The guys that you named, some of those, we were on what was called the executive committee. So you would have everybody who has a tournament, and then you had the executive committee was like a steering committee, and it was a permanent committee. In other words, we would be on there for life if we chose to.
Well, I know that you lost Mr. Francis, and then you lost Mr. Kirby later on in a couple of years. But then you and Jose Santa Maria stayed all the way up into the controversial starting of the TNT, which I was really proud to be a part of, and it was an incredible circuit, created champions, and we got to have an adventure, which is old news now, but you guys kind of started it, the road through the Super Grands, which is the first World Sport Karate Championship. How did the TNT come about and the vision of that?
Unfortunately, you know, when you get a lot of strong personalities together like the AOK had, there were some of us in the AOK that had, the AOK sanctioning of our tournament. And then some of us had the sanctioning from the NBL. And with that NBL sanctioning and those of us that had that sanctioning had the bigger tournaments in the AOK. Well, our tournaments mushroomed after that. And so we started growing faster and faster than the others were going. And sometimes that creates a little bit of dissension or you know, maybe a little jealousy or something. So at 1 year at the meeting, because it was a Democratic organization, at the meeting they decided that.
Can I tell you what I heard?
Okay.
You tell me what happened. What I heard was that you guys had a great meeting, and then you were going to break for lunch, but before you broke for lunch, it was either you or Jose or Mr. Santa Maria made some, I guess everybody contributed funds, and you made a motion for them funds to be brought back and everyone to receive their funds back, and it was voted that everyone get their funds back. So when you guys went to lunch, when you came back, you basically dropped the TNT on everybody. Is that not true?
Well, no, that's a misinterpretation of
okay.
the fact.
That was a rumor. Cool. That's a rumor.
Yeah.
I love it.
No, what in fact did happen was that at that meeting, they decided that to have an AOK sanction, you couldn't be sanctioned by anyone else. Now, obviously,
oh.
that was only directed. Yeah. That was only directed toward those of us who were that
NBL.
Had also the NBL sanctions.
Oh.
So
and remember, listeners, that was in the beginning. This is Mr. Minshew is a pioneer. There wasn't any NBL in Texas. I know it's all news now because everyone, you know, a lot of major people do them and they've done them. But Mr. Minshew was one of the first. And talking about the NBL, Mr. Minshew, we were there from the very beginning. What was your vision going into that? Because you went. You ended up having some great world champions, Sid and your lovely wife, Chris. But besides,
yeah.
we're going to talk about them a little bit later, but what was your vision going into the NBL? We covered three tournament sanctions, and the NBL was really your last one. So tell me what your vision was, what that was.
I just thought, when Boyce Liddell talked to us about it, I think at that time he had five tournaments nationwide that were, you know, around most on the East Coast, and he was losing tournaments as fast as he was getting them. So when we came in, Jose and myself and Tony Lopez and Ishmael and you know so forth. When we came in, it just about doubled the size of his tournament circuit. And I always liked the idea that it wasn't a one tournament off deal. In other words, you had to work through the year to gain standing in order to be able to participate on a high level in the NBL finals, and then it determined a champion and a grand champion.
Yes, sir.
As a matter of fact, And I know that you know this, but I'm just going to mention it anyway. My beautiful and talented wife, Chris Minshew, is the only woman to have won the women's grand championship two times. And I think it was the year after she won it the second time where they discontinued having grand champion for women. And they cut it back to having weight division champions.
She is incredible, and we're going to talk about her in just a minute. But, you know, your connections in Mexico, one of the reasons why you traveled is just a huge tournament. You had incredible connections out there. And I know that one person has passed, Mr. Cabalas. But, you know, you and I, we got to travel around the world, and he was one of the gentlemen that you introduced me to. What was it like down in Mexico? Because you were really well-known down there.
Yeah, I was. It was really very fortunate. I met Sergio Cabalas. When he was with his instructor at what's called the Clubes Okinawate, and the Okinawan clubs, and
yes,
and they had a big organization there in Mexico City, and I met them at a tournament somewhere down in the valley. I don't even remember where, honestly, but I met them and talked with them at length at some time, and they had been, you know, they were reading the American Martial Arts magazine, so they were familiar with my name somewhat. And so I invited them to come up to the Karate Olympics, and my gosh, when they came, I mean, they came in full force. They brought literally hundreds.
But you know what? I'm going to thank you again publicly, Mr. Minshew, because if you remember, and it's hard to remember this far back, I flew to New Mexico one year, and I didn't take my driver's license. And you got me into the country.
I do, yeah.
And you got me into the tournament. And then I ended up kicking a guy in the groin or something. I had to apologize the whole tournament and to the producer.
I know.
It was a mess. And thank you for guiding me through that ordeal. But it was a lot of fun in Mexico, and you always took some incredible fighters. Now the one
Mexico, we really kind of, through the Karate Olympics, we were able to open the door to Mexico coming to the United States and Americans going down to Mexico. And the same thing with the people in Guatemala that came up. They brought up a huge contingent from down there.
Guys.
Yeah. And
well,
so
who was that from that team that Don Mullins was on? In Mexico, I forgot who all was on Luis Vasquez, I think. You took an incredible team one year and just kicked butt. Remember?
We took several teams down to Mexico City and fought in their international team competition they had down there, and we were able to win it. But I had some really good fighters on the team, there's no question. And
coaching and training champions was part of your reputation, or is your reputation too, besides the fire producer and all the neat things I said in the beginning. And you're an incredible coach. I know that. You've been coaching me for 30 years. But, you know, there's three particular girls that I know that they're all ladies now. Goodness gracious, they're all one just really great. Well, both of them are grown up. And that's Sid and Stoney and Miss Minshew.
Yeah.
I mean, let's start with Sid, okay? What an incredible fighter. I mean, she was – every time I think of her, I think of her dominating. And did you always see that in her from day one?
Yeah, she had – she was naturally flexible. And her teen years was very powerful and very, very strong. And, you know, when Chris and Sid and Stoney would come into a tournament, and of course all of them had Minshew written on their back, I mean, it was, I'm sure, a little demoralizing to the females that
women's
were fighting
division,
that day.
In the women's division. Now, what is Sid doing
girl.
Now?
I'm sorry?
What is Sid Minshew doing now? What's he doing now?
Sid lives in St. Petersburg, Florida,
right.
And she's married, of course, and she has three children. She just had her third child recently.
Wow.
And she and her husband are entrepreneurs, and they purchase, renovate, and sell houses, and they're very successful at it there in Florida. And
I see her.
And
so that's the teenage fighter that you talked about. Now let's talk about Stoney. Definitely one of my favorite competitors of all time. She even imitated me one year, put a pillow in her, and wore my Hakiman, did a Gary Lee competition.
I know.
And Sid, I believe it was for her birthday that I went to your house, and I kept cucumbers and bananas on her stomach. I mean, you guys have really adopted me, but Stoney was an amazing competitor. Kata, way before her time. But her fighting, again, she fought like you, just really tenacious. You know, tell them about your vision with Stoney and what she's doing now.
Stoney is getting married in May. She graduated from Baylor University with a degree in psychology, and then took an accelerated course that required a degree at the University of Houston, and got her nursing degree, her Bachelor of Science in Nursing, in 10 months. I mean, she's just an incredible student, and
wow,
and you know, a very talented young lady, as she always has been. She's left-handed and left-legged. And I know you saw many of her fights, and it was so frustrating because she's so nice, you know. Oh, are you okay? You know, then and that would just make the because you know the boys and girls were fighting together at those ages, and you know the fathers would be yelling at their sons, "You let a girl beat you," all that kind of stuff.
But Sonny,
we had a tournament.
Beat up Garrett, she always beat up Garrett. It was fun.
Let me tell you this story. This is funny. We were at a tournament in San Antonio, and Stoney and one of my other little brown belt girls were both cheerleaders, and they were at a cheerleading competition in San Antonio, as well as the karate competition. So they went to the cheerleading competition first, and then we contacted them by phone about the time they needed to be there. So they came running into the karate competition in their cheerleading outfits with their little sparkle in their hair and their little ponytails and, you know, a little sparkle on their face and all that kind of stuff. They went into the dressing room, changed clothes, came out in their karate uniforms, both of them, because they were in, they had two weight divisions in that tournament for their age group. Both of them won their division. Then they went and put on their cheerleading uniforms and went back to the cheerleading tournament.
That's funny. Well, listen,
you should have seen the dads of the boys. They were just beside themselves. You let a little cheerleader beat you.
Oh, I bet they did get some rough. But how about I mean, Mrs. Minshew, I mean, she's kicked me in the head a few times in my shows, and just an incredible. She's actually was a great performer with Creative Weapons. I mean, I lost her quite a few times because she really earned those first places. And the neat thing about Chris was she was a fighter. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
When she came into the school.
Was she just coachable? Because I think. Well,
she was incredibly coachable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was so easy because, you know, when she came into the school, first of all, understand that she came in, she was a skilled athlete when she came in because she went to college. She had a gymnastics scholarship, and she was also a cheerleader in high school and college. And so when she came into the school, she had all this athletic ability. And when she came in, she thought she would like to do the katas. She had no idea that she would like to fight. But once she got a taste of it, you know, it's like a vampire tasting blood. I mean, holy cow. I mean, she didn't want to do kata anymore. She just wanted to fight. And I remember one time we were in a tournament.
She was entertaining to watch.
She's in the other room with my daughter and my granddaughter, and they're planning wedding stuff.
That's right. Sonny's getting married in May.
Yeah.
And listen, I'm gonna pay some bills right now. Stay on the line and listen to what I'm going to be doing here, and I'm going to do some upcoming events and do the artifacts thing. But this is part one of the George Minshew interview, Parts Unknown. I'd like to name some of the upcoming events that we'll be sponsoring and be part of, and that's starting off with this weekend, Alan Goldberg's Super Mega Action Martial Arts Weekend in Atlantic City at the Tropicana Resort and Casino. This will be January 27th and 28th and 29th with an awards, banquet, tournament, special events, and many, many seminars with the best. This will be a live AMAA radio blog booth and a radio show broadcasting with Hansi Jesse Bowen. And this will be live Thursday, Friday, Saturday night at the awards banquet with guest host Michael Pasquale Jr. Now, this will be our debut for our 24/7 radio blog that will be featuring all our past shows and our new format that we have for the radio blog just for you. And my part of the Pioneers and Legends show will be a big part of it, and you can listen to the shows. I think right now the Eddie Monster Man show is debuting. Now, also, for more information, you can please call Mr. Goldberg at 917-873-5963. And I know personally he'd love to hear from you, and you tell him that you're going to be coming. Then we're going to be supporting the Superfoot Tournament in Cleveland, Ohio. This is March the 31st and April 1st. And super promoters Don DeBreeze and Richard McClain, they're going to be putting on the event for Bill Wallace. Now, I know for years, probably hundreds of people have probably approached Bill and asked him to use his name to endorse the tournament. But he's waited to pick out the very best. And Don DeBreeze and Rich McClain, I went last year and had the first class act. Mr. Cordy was there. Mr. Willis was there. Quite a few people. Mr. Smith is, you know, the thing about it is that Mr. Wallace is an incredible icon for the Sport Karate Museum, and we want to support him. For more information, you can call Don DeBreeze at 440-331-0010. Then we're coming to the MGM Super Show, Las Vegas, and the Pioneers and Legends booth. Again, a live radio feed with brother Jesse Bowen and featuring the legendary Jim Buten from Oklahoma and world champion Jimmy Tiberius will be there signing autographs in the books. And this will be a book signing for anybody that's been in the book or in the book that's going to be in the book for 2017. We'll need your signature, please. Now, the big event that they're talking about here in Texas is the August 4th and 5th. This is in Washington, D.C. We're coming up to the Texas thing. August 4th and 5th, Trippy Dennis Brown in his NASCAR U.S. Capital Classic and Legends Banquet. And this will be a book signing, his major tournament, and the Banquet for the Living Legends, Mr. Bowen's event, will be at Mr. Brown's event at the U.S. Capital Classic. And that's August 4th and 5th. And now, going back to the big event in Dallas, Texas, August 11th, 12th, and 13th, that's going to be the Kempo Hall of Fame and the Gathering of Eagles. This is sponsored by Dr. Nick Chamberlain and with the blessing of Grandmaster Al Tracy. This is bringing all the Kempo together, the Rua Lao, the Kempo, the Chinese Kempo, the Kaji Kempo. Anything to do with Kempo, we're going to invite you to be a part of this. Lots of seminars, lots of camaraderie. We went last year. It was a first-class event. For more information, please call 214-793-1234. You know, we're doing something really special, Mr. Mincio. I don't know how much I've told you about this, but in Cotter Wars this year and the tournament that Darlene McPherson and myself were putting together on September the 29th and 30th, we've invited quite a few tournaments from the major circuit to send their grand champions and have a shootout in Houston and develop a national black belt kata champion, taking the very best from each tournament and inviting them to come and compete. The museum taking care of their entry form and taking care of them. Just all they have to do is show up and compete. And some of the tournaments that contributed and are part of this event and we've asked to be a part of is the AMAA Nationals, and that's Jesse Bowen, producer. The World Cup Finals, John Chung, producer. The Ocean State Nationals, Christine Bannon Rodriguez and Don Rodriguez, producer. The Timothy Classic, one of my favorites, Bill Bidola, producer. The Dixieland Nationals, Dewey Earwood, producer. The Empire State Nationals, Lee Ireland, producer. The Battle of Atlanta, the Reef family, Mr. Corley and Ms. Gregory, producers. The Diamond Nationals, Mr. John Worley, Mr. Pat Worley, Mr. Larry Carnahan, producers. The Jambon Nationals, Lee Crash Petway and Jason Holmes, producers. Of course, the Bill Wallace Superfoot Tournament, John DeBries and Richard McClain, producers. And the U.S. Capital Classic, Dennis Brown, producers. The American Kick, Bob Leiker, producer. And the Grand Slam Nationals, Jeff Goss, producers. And the Long Beach Internationals, Jeff Cooper and Mr. Neil Harden, producers. It will take 8 people from the museum, Mr. Minshew, and we're going to put them in as a wild card. And we'll have the eliminations Saturday afternoon and the finals Saturday night at Your Roast, which we're going to talk about in just a few minutes. And that's the upcoming schedule that the Sport Karate Museum Archives is supporting right now. And we're going to go to the email, and then we're going to go to the Legends game with Mr. Minshew. And here we go. The first email of the night, and throw in your feeling, Mr. Minshew, if you understand the question, is that this is from Edgar Mendoza. He's from Deland, Florida. And his question is, someone told me that sport karate is different in different parts of the country and is different in Florida than in California or in Texas. Is it that different? And what do I need to be prepared for if I leave Florida to compete? I'll let you answer that first, and I'll answer it. Go ahead. You got a feeling on that?
Sure. Yeah, it is absolutely different. And part of it is not just the rules, because if you kind of read the rules, they're fairly similar all around. So it's not so much in the rules, but it's in the application of rules. Because in some parts of the country, because of sort of institutionalized learning, you'll see that the referees and the competitors are more likely perhaps to call a reverse punch to the body because they see it happen. They know these guys are very good at it, and that's something that they subconsciously look for. And so California is an area where you'll see a lot of that. In other parts of the country, you might see that a different hand technique, a back fist or a ridge hand or something like that, is predominant, where they will call that over that body punch instead of the body punch. So those are the things that makes it different from a technical standpoint. Then there's also the, the physicality part of it, which in some parts of the country, a little a soft tag will garner you a point. In other parts of the country, you have to bury your punch up to your wrist in order to garner a point. So those are some of the things that make it different. Some places they don't allow you to strike, to the head with the fist, but they'll let you kick them in the head. So you need to be aware of the rules and also of the traditions of the area, if that helps.
You said half my answer. I, as an international competitor myself, and I had the pleasure of traveling with you around the world and around the country, every sanctioned group has different rules. Whether you fought in NASCAR or NBL or USAF or any group, it's different. And my suggestion is to the gentleman, Edgar, Mr. Mendoza, is that join a sanctioned group, learn the rules, and then also learn as you're involved and competing, learn about other tournament circuits, and maybe go to YouTube and watch how they fight, see if they fight like you or compete like you, and, experiment a little bit. Sport karate has grown into an incredible sport, and it was born here in America. I hope that Mr. Minchie and myself answered your question. The second question is from Susan Levyhouse. She's talking to me from Phoenix, Arizona. And her question was the movie Billy Jack for real? My favorite part is when the crescent kick kicks Poser in the park and in the jaw, and he beats everyone up. Who was the double for him, or did he do everything himself? Well, the actor's name was Tom Laughlin, and the double, as you might have saw, because he wore a hat, is a gentleman named Bon Suhan. Their style is called Hapakito. And along with Bruce Lee, Billy Jack came out almost at the same time, but it gave a different view. Do you remember the movie Billy Jack, Mr. Minchie?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to take this foot, and I'm going to put it up the side of your head, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it.
And he does it. And everyone loved that. Everybody wanted to take karate or martial arts after that. They didn't realize it was Hapakito, but they wanted to learn that kick. They wanted to learn how to do that kick against somebody's jaw. But that was Tom Laughlin, and the stunt double who did a couple more movies with him was a great man named Bon Suhan. We've lost both of them now. Rest in peace, those gentlemen. Well, thank you for the emails. And again, we try to answer all of them on the air. Or we get in touch with you and let you know the answer the best we can. Now, the part of the artifact show, right before I go back to Mr. Minchie, is very important because you as a listener, I want you to know what we've got. And last week we talked about the incredible black belt that Mr. Harrison passed down from Mr. Reed, Mr. Burleson, Mr. Stone, and Mr. Steen, and all the incredible things that we mentioned. And this is part two of the artifact section. We have numerous Texas Golden Greek Awards from Lightning Sorrell, mine, and some others. We also have Greeks, Demetrius Adonis' pants, donated by Kati Fakno. We have a personal signed written poems, signed posters by Mr. Mike Stone, the first superstar of sport karate. We have personal signed pictures in a book by Mr. Benny Akitas, the Brotherhood coin from the Fort Worth Police Department, and that was donated by Mr. David Collins. We have Jimmy's Gatto's signed picture in magazine covers. Duke Churchill's top 20 favorite pictures of American sport karate martial arts history. We have a signed DVD of the Side Fighter from Don the Dragon Wilson. Don Wills donated the original PKC and PKA rule books that he was in charge of as a commissioner for many years. Charlotte Hoffman Emerson, one of my favorite people in the whole world, prices old Texas sport karate pictures and a beautiful CKRT knife that Doug Emerson gave to me personally. An original Enter the Dragon movie patch that was signed by Mr. Bob Wall. Starbash signed poster from Las Vegas. An autograph. This is cool. A Jeff W. Smith Stars and Stripes uniform top that he gave me personally. Steve Gibson's donated Joe Lewis's original patch and his very old Japanese swords. Mikey Romore, God bless her, donated pictures and articles. Sookie Gary Dill, personal JKD, Bruce Lee connection of his personal stuff. Philip Bradley, personal uniform, a red samurai belt, handmade personal tapas, memoirs of a white crane techniques, and, of course, we got Mr. Rick Lynch's signed books, original Six Flags Texas All-Star shows from 1982 to 1997 that you can see on YouTube under the Lost Interviews of Professor Gary Lee. And two of my favorite objects, we've got world champion Chris Minshew's championship NBL National Black Belt League jacket, white jacket, and gold ring from the Colorado Supergrams, and Mr. George Minshew's signed pictures and Black Belt Academy poster items. Now, Mr. Minshew, I want to go back to part two of the interview, and I want to start right off that with the red glove story. I heard that you were so fast with your right hand or left hand. Which hand was it?
Right hand, yeah.
Your right hand, that you bought out a store of red gloves because the judges couldn't see the hand technique. It was so fast. Is that your story?
Well, it's you know, it's like everything else. It's part fact and part fiction. But the truth is that when I made black belt, Gary, I mean, you know, I went to every tournament I could find, and of course that wasn't every weekend. They didn't have tournaments like that then, and I could not win. Forget about winning the tournament. I couldn't win a fight, and I kept questioning my ability. I questioned my work ethic. I went back and worked harder and harder and harder. And so I was at a tournament in Oklahoma City. I was watching these guys fight, and I thought, you know what? I left the tournament, went downtown Oklahoma City to a women's, whatever it's called, ladies store, you know, where they buy their purses and their dresses and all that. And I asked them, do you have a pair of red women's gloves? And they said, well, yeah, we've got to look over here. So I bought a pair of red women's gloves and went back to the tournament, and I taped that red woman's dress glove, taped it on my wrist, put it on and taped it with tape on my right hand, because I knew that when I had been fighting, I knew that I was hitting these people, because they wouldn't let you bust them in the face at that time on purpose. So I knew that I was getting there before some people were getting to me, but I wasn't getting it scored. From the time I started wearing that red glove until I finally wore it out, starting at that tournament, I started winning and winning. Not I don't want to exaggerate, but I was most often in the winner's circle, you know, the finals where you fight for the championship, most of the time, from the time I started using that red glove. And it was because I told it, because one of the referees asked me, he said, what do you have on your hand? I said, it's a cloth glove. And he said, what's that for? And I said, it's so that you can see me hit with a back fist. Now, of course, you know, Gary, I planted in his mind that I was going to hit this guy with my – yeah. And I didn't care if the other guy knew, because I was so convinced I could hit anybody.
That adds another first-year reputation, the very first study impetus. Now, I want to go into the Legends name game. I do this to every celebrity guy that I talk to, and you've been an incredible coach, like Mr. Mejia. And again, publicly, I want to thank you for all you've done for me personally. But I'm going to name some names here. 30 seconds or two sentences you can say about them. Keep it short and sweet, but say from your heart what you feel about them. I made a list for you. It's spontaneous, so here we go. You ready to play the Legends name game? Here we go. Ed Daniel.
If there ever was a gentle giant, that is Ed Daniel. The guy's like 6'8". He came down to my karate school to help me get ready for my black belt test. He lives in Dallas. I live in Houston. We were scheduled to there were four of us left in the competition at a tournament. And I didn't know this until later, but Ed had gone to the scoring table and told the person that if I won my match, because he had already won, he said if I won my match, he was going to withdraw and give it to the other guy because he didn't want to fight me in the tournament. Not that he was afraid of me at all. He just didn't. He just loved me, you know, and I love him too. He's a great guy.
Absolutely. Here we go. Two sentences, 30 seconds. Alan Steen.
Alan Steen, one of the strongest personalities that I've ever known in the martial arts. By sheer force of will, he was able to transform karate in the North Texas area, up in the Dallas area, and create a dynasty there in Dallas. Very strong personality.
Ishmael Robles, world champion Ishmael Robles.
Probably, in my opinion, one of the most underappreciated fighters anywhere. Ishmael Robles was awesome, and he would knock you out with his left front leg round kick, and was a take no prisoners fighter. He didn't even have a reverse, and I wish that more people had an opportunity to watch him fight, because he was marvelous. And I watched him fight all the way up from the time he was a green belt on up. He's just a marvelous guy. I really like him a lot.
I used to love to watch the rivalries between Jennifer Robles and Miss Minshew. Those were some good fights. And we were on the same team together. You know, I was lucky enough to be on that first NBL competition team. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Fred Whirlwind Wren from St. Louis.
Fred Wren, probably. Were it not for Fred Wren, I don't know how I could have made black belt. Because I had heard of Fred, but we weren't good friends. We just didn't know each other very well. And I went up to Dallas to take my test with Alan Steen, because my instructor, Pat Burleson, was in California, and he had given me permission because Alan Steen had asked me to test for black belt. And he gave me permission to take that test there. And so he told me what I had to know, these two katas, Chogi and Bosset, which are pretty black belt katas. So yes, I learned those thanks to David Moon, who is now the king guy in Mexico City.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But David,
how about Chuck Norris?
Huh?
How about Chuck Norris?
Chuck Norris?
Yes, sir.
He is the epitome of a
30 seconds.
He's the epitome of a gentleman. A tremendous fighter, all heart, but is just soft-spoken and always a class act.
I know he's a personal friend of yours. I know you guys have known each other for many years. Now, the next gentleman,
I've known him forever.
He stayed at your house at the grand opening of the museum, and you were so
cordial
to take
him
around. And Mike Stone. Tell me about Mike Stone.
Mike Stone. Mike came down. The first time I saw Mike was in California, and he was somebody, let's see, who was there? Chuck was there, Joe Lewis, and Mike was wanting to learn how to do a reverse back kick. And so they put this bag in a chair, and they showed it to him a couple of times, and he spun around and hit that back. I'm not kidding. He cut it in freaking two. He was incredibly powerful. He's not a big guy. But
yes,
he's a tremendous athlete. A lot of people don't realize that Mike Stone was all state in football in California. But I'm going to tell you an interesting story. Jose San Maria, probably one of the smartest guys I know as far as organizational skills. A tremendous teacher of martial arts. He had some tremendous students. But his organizational skills were beyond compare.
I know that you guys were very close, and I want to apologize, Mr. Minshew. I got some other people that I want to mention, because I know that you know everybody. You know, that's the pleasure of who George Minshew is. So I want to get these people in. Scott Hogarth.
He's a Texan living in Canada. He was born in Canada, lives in Canada, but he's a Texan at heart, because he's our kind of guy. He's quiet. He's soft spoken in some ways and boisterous in the others. And when he walks in, he is the center of attention, no question, and deserves
it. Yes, good martial arts, good Goju martial arts. Now, like I said, this next lady, she thinks the world of you, and she's coming to the Legends just to see you get roasted. Charlotte Hoffman Everson.
Charlotte, I've known Charlotte since she was a child. When we were at a tournament one time, I didn't between the eliminations and the finals, people used to all kind of gather in one room, and I had had a long night the night before, so I laid down on the bed there in the room and went to sleep. So unbeknownst to me, they got Charlotte probably instigated it now that I know her, and she covered herself up with a sheet except for her neck, and put her arm over me, and somebody took pictures of it with a Polaroid camera, which was an instant camera at the time. They don't even make them anymore, I don't think. But anyway, they showed me that picture, and I said, are you out of your mind? But Charlotte is an absolute lady and a jewel and a tremendous fighter.
I wanted you to say that because she's so shy. She's so shy, and you know she's gotten into the Rocky DiRico's International Black Hall of Fame this year that you and Chris got into last year. And now I wanted someone like yourself to say how good a fighter she was, because she came from Mr. Chuck Lovins' dojo. She had to be bad. I mean, I just that history of Mr. Lovins, of course, Mr. Emerson, and all those stories I used to hear from Mr. Lovins' fighting. You know that when I asked Bill Wallace and Chuck Norris separately, who was the toughest fighter they ever fought, and this was separately years apart, they both said some guy from Texas, his name was Chuck Lovins. So Charlotte comes from her, from him, so I know how tough she was. How tough was she, Mr. Minshew?
Charlotte, well, she made black belt with Chuck Lovins. That's about all you need to say.
Okay, okay. So let's go on to the last one, and I know you used to coach her. You like to coach a lot of champions. It's Linda Denley.
Linda Denley is an intimidating, ferocious fighter in the ring and outside of the ring. She is the most gentle person at total class. And I've been fortunate to know her since she was an orange belt. and watched her come up all the way, and then she and Louis Vasquez, who's a tremendous young junior fighter, they had trained together, both made black belt, and then they both started coming over and working out with me, which I was privileged to have them come over. I really appreciated having a chance to work with her, and she is another one of those people that is incredibly coachable. If I said to her, do a left body punch, whatever, she'd do a left body punch. I mean, and make it work too. But I would, a good coach would never tell somebody to do something they couldn't do. But I knew she could do most all of it.
Well, we've had an incredible interview and show, Mr. Minshew. And as we wrap it up here, I know that you're being roasted this year for the 25th, the 25 Living Legends roast that we've accumulated at the Sport Clock Museum. What's it like being roasted and being underneath the marshmallows and wood and being chosen to be a history journal for the Sport Clock Museum? That's going to be your closing statement. Tell me, what's it feel like to be a history journal?
Well, first of all, to be a history journal in the Sport Karate Museum, and particularly be, in that group of people that were selected first, was a tremendous honor. And
yes, you were an original.
The honor and privilege of being the person that's roasted at the 25th anniversary is beyond belief. I am humbled by these kind of accolades that are showered on me that. I guess that's what happens when you live as long as I have. You can't do much anymore, but you get things. You don't win things; you sort of get things. And I can't wait for someone to be able to try to roast me, because there is a counter roast. I get to come back at them, and so I'm just passing the word out there: be careful.
Well, Mr. Minshew, you realize that out of 25 Living Legends roasts, you're the only one that I've had to sell lottery tickets for. Everybody
I know a lot of people want to try.
Everybody wants to get up there and say something about George Minshew. I mean, everybody. So if you're not doing it September 29th and 30th, you need to come down to Houston and see the roasting of George Minshew, one and only pioneer of Texas martial arts. Again, thank you for an incredible co-hosting and interview that was uplifting to me.
Gary, I want to add to this roast coming up. If you're out there and you're listening to this broadcast, come to that roast because you'll have a chance to meet people that helped put this martial arts together in this country, the people that made it happen, and you'll also meet the people that are making it happen today, the new guns, the guys that are out there doing things that we couldn't have imagined could be done by a human being when we were first doing it. So you get the whole spectrum, and there's not another event in the country that pulls the different people together in Houston, Texas. Be here in September. Okay, Gary, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Minshew, for the plug, but it's about the comradeship, as you said. You've been to every one. You've been there from the very beginning. You was there at the Hilton at the very first one, and it's all about the comradeship of people just coming together and
Absolutely.
Having a great weekend of sharing. And, the food's good, the atmosphere is good, the people is incredible. So, Hachi Bowen, are you there? Is anybody on the line? Or would you like to say the closing statement? You've got an incredible show.
We have a couple people on the line tonight, and so I am going to open all the lines up. So if anyone, this is a great interview, a great opportunity for you to express yourself, say something to our guests, and also say something to our hosts. Okay, all the lines are now open.
There. Hello. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, George.
Hi.
I know that voice.
It's Mikey.
Hey, Mikey, how are you?
I'm okay. I just wanted to tell you, I agree with you on a lot of things, and we'll talk about it in Houston. But what you said about Ishmael is absolutely 100% correct. I agree.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Well, Mikey, thank you. I can't wait to see you again, man.
I can't hardly wait, too. I wish September would hurry up and get here.
Don't we all?
I'm sure you're waiting for October to get here.
Oh, I cannot wait. I can't wait.
I want to be front and center. I don't want to miss a word.
You guys are special. You're part of that generation I work for every day. And to have Mr. George Minshew and Miss Mikey Rowe Moore on the line, that's pretty cool for
Is he trying to imply we're old, George?
No.
I think we're like the silver fox, Mikey.
Yeah, it's all praise. I mean, Mikey was the first woman arbitrator for Mr. Parker's International. And George, you, as we said in the interview, you created first in so many things. So the listeners who are listening to the show, whether they're listening live or they listen to the podcast later on the new network that we're creating and introducing this weekend, the thing about it is they can be able to listen to Mikey Rowe Moore and George Minshew, the people who created Point Karate as we know it. I know I sound like a broken record, but this is what I do for a living, guys. I love talking about the history. So, well, Mikey, thanks for calling. Do we have anybody else on the line? Not your boy.
The line's open.
Hello, you're on the air with Legends and Pioneers and George Minshew.
Hey, how you doing? This is Mike Pacheco from Florida.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, I've enjoyed listening to the show. I like listening to all the, old stories and everything else. I go up there to Houston every year for about the last 3-4 years.
Okay.
Really enjoy it. You get to learn a lot.
Mikey likes to knock out people, Mr. Minshew. That's what he does for what he did for a living. He was a boxer, professional boxer, and then he said, "Hey, I can learn how to kick."
I thought it was pretty neat. Kick somebody to sleep.
Mike, isn't it cool to be able to talk and interact with the legends of sport karate? Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you get to talk to all these guys, and they tell you, you know, the nicknames, how they got it, and stuff like that. It was really cool. I mean, I've met a lot of people down there, and everybody's really nice. And I mean, it's a great place. I mean, I go, like I said, I've been going about 3 or 4 years in a row, and I enjoy it every time I go up there.
Well, we always wonder.
Hey, Mike, where in Florida do you live?
I live in right now. I live in Deltona.
I have one of my daughters lives in St. Petersburg.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good piece
Mike,
of way.
Thanks for calling in.
Mike,
we really appreciate your input, and we'll see you in a few months, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay, Auntie Jesse Bowen, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
I apologize for going over a little of the time, but Mr. Minster is just one of these incredible people that I looked at the time and I pushed it as far as I could. I apologize, but I think it was well worth it. We got to cover a lot of cool stuff today. It's one of my better ones I can put into the can. And speaking of the can, as we close up, talk about our future, about this new website and the new way for 24/7, the radio blog, as we close out.
Well, you know, one of the things, and guys, this is a great show tonight, and this is what we really want to not just share tonight, but shows like this will be part of our rerun shows. We have a new website coming up, not just a website, but it's actually a radio station that we'll be playing. Right now, we'll definitely be playing for at least 12 hours a day with different programs, different speakers, providing information from our shows in the martial arts to my personal coaching shows to other guests in there. I'll be playing for everything, you know, Motivational Monday, which entails, martial arts business coaching, meditation classes on it. It's going to offer a lot of different things, but everything is sort of created around the martial arts. We'll actually have programs on teaching about social media. So it's designed to be an educational station. We'll have, the soul hour, the country hour, the jazz hour, the spiritual hour. So it's going to be a very diverse radio station. I've been doing blog radio now for over 10 years. Part of my coaching business that I've done, and really has helped me a great deal. So we're hoping that we can get martial artists to be able to tune in. And, you know, we're hoping the next couple of weeks it's going to be very simple because we're going to have a mobile app. So to listen to the show instead of calling in, all you have to do is just click on your app and you'll be able to, you know, hear the show, find that music time. Plus the website's going to have, you know, a series of different musics that you can purchase on there. It's going to have updated movies, previews of upcoming movies, photo galleries up there, some of our martial arts events. Martial arts, it's going to be so complete as a website. And once you start going there, we're hoping that people will want to be there, and a lot of our sponsors and advertisers will have their information up there. So it's designed to be informative, and we're really looking for this to be really a first-class, not show, but a first-class radio station. So if there's anyone out there who would like to become a part of the marketing program that we're planning, please let us know, because we're hoping that we'll be able to market not just our Who's Who book, but also market some of the events that's coming up for tournament promoters, so that we just got a whole lot of great things that's going to be available for everyone to be able to participate in. You know, it's going to be a great station. So we're hoping that by Friday we'll have it up, and we'll be broadcasting from the station on Friday, and we're planning on Saturday evening broadcasting a live broadcast of the speaker part of the Action Martial Arts Honors Award event, and hopefully we'll have a chance to actually broadcast the awards presentation as people are actually receiving the awards.
Well, you know, I want to say thank you again to Auntie Jesse Bowen and all the work you've done to be able to do the Pioneers and Legends Archives radio show, Parts Unknown, and these incredible interviews. We are going, moving forward and working all together. And we hope you enjoyed the show tonight. And always, again, thank you for everything you do for us and just to listen. And with my closing statement, to be able to be part of what we do, you may go to www.sportkaratemuseum.org, or you can contact me at ProfessorGaryLee@gmail.com, or call me directly at 713-483-0476. We said a lot of stuff tonight. This, we're going to be putting it up here on the air so you'll be able to re-listen to it. Mr. Minshew, one last thing. Thank you from the heart. Who you are, what you've done. From writing the forward in my book to being a part of my life and helping become the karate man I've turned out to be. I thank you from the heart, and I thank you for this interview. I hope you have a blessed evening.
I'm going to, Gary, and I thank you for doing what you do and saving the history of this martial art. No one else could do it, and you did it.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. And, you know, people like Mr. Bowen is keeping in everybody's face through this radio network, and I just got good things about this radio network. I got good feelings about what we're going to do with it and the people that are surrounding it. And I'm really excited about it. But thank you for being a part of the history books of the radio blog. Mr. Bowen, aloha, and Texas, good night.
All right, sir. Have a blessed evening. Thank you.
Aloha.